नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। टुडे आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10, द एडवेंट ऑफ लॉर्ड कृष्णा, इंट्रोडक्शन, टेक्स्ट नंबर 33 एंड 34। शंख तुर्य मृदंगाश्च नेदुर्दुन्दुभ्यः समान् समम् नेदुर्दुन्दुभ्यः समम् प्रयाण प्रकमे इत्तत्तात भरवद वरवधो समंगलम सुमंगलम। ट्रांसलेशन। ओ बिलवड सन महाराज परीक्षित, व्हेन द ब्राइड एंड ब्राइडग्रूम वर रेडी टू स्टार्ट, कॉन्शल्स, बिगल्स, ड्रम्स एंड कैटल ड्रम्स ऑल वाइब्रेटेड इन कंसर्ट फॉर देयर ऑस्पिशियस डिपार्चर। Text 34, I'll read the translation. While Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, an unembodied voice addressed him. You foolish rascal, the eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you. So this is the verse today we're discussing. I'll read the purport now. Srila Prabhupada. The omen spoke of Ashtama Garbha, referring to the eighth pregnancy, but did not clearly say whether the child was to be a son or a daughter. Even if Kamsa were to see that the eighth child of Devaki was a daughter, he should have no doubt that the eighth child was to kill him. According to Vishwakosha dictionary, the word garbha means embryo, and also arvaka or the child also means child. Kamsa was affectionate toward his sister, and therefore he had become the chariot driver to carry her and his brother-in-law to their home. The demigods, however, did not want Kamsa to be affectionate toward Devaki, and therefore from an unseen position, they encouraged Kamsa to offend her. Moreover, the six sons of Marichi had been cursed to take birth from the womb of Devaki, and upon being killed by Kamsa, they would be delivered. When Devaki understood that Kamsa would be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who would appear from her womb, she felt great joy. The word vahase is also significant because it indicates that the ominous vibration condemned Kamsa for acting just like a beast of burden by carrying his enemy's mother. Hare Krishna. So, I welcome all the devotees for the Sunday morning Bhagavatam class. Today verse is it's like a turning point. In this, the excitement increases from this point onwards for Krishna's appearance. So sometimes when I read this verse, particularly when I read this verse, I always think, why this thing happened the way it happened? Why this unembodied voice spoke, whatever it just now I read, that you foolish rascal, the eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you. Like straight in the face it was spoken. So Prabhupada actually explains very nicely in this purport all these points. So first, why unembodied voice? Because the demigod, whoever spoke it or whoever assigned to speak this, if he would have come in front and spoke it straight, then Kamsa would have killed him first. Right. I was talking to our Janis Prabhu, who is Janak Prabhu.
Janak.
And he was telling me a very nice thing about comparing allopathy and Ayurveda. He said, allopathy, Prabhupada sometimes is demoniac. And Ayurveda is not demoniac. It is very friendly. Why allopathy is demoniac, he was explaining me. He said, because when a messenger comes to a demon, if he brings a good news, he rewards him. But he brings a bad news, he kills him. That's how demon is. So when Hanumanji went to Lanka, when he carried that bad news to Ravana, Ravana wanted to kill him immediately, kill him like that. So allopathy, what happens? The nervous system, which is like a messenger. Suppose there is a toothache, the nervous system carries the pain, saying there is a problem in tooth. But do you give a painkiller and stop the nervous system? Painkiller stops the nervous system, doesn't heal the tooth actually. It just stops the nervous system, that's all. The messenger is killed. So the demigod came as a messenger to Kamsa, so he was afraid. If I come in front and say, he'll kill me first. They knew all these, you know, traits of the demons. Didn't come in front. That's why unembodied, he was very afraid. But why the demigod spoke it the way they spoke, Prabhupada explains in the purport. Prabhupada says, because Kamsa was very attached to Devaki, being a sister. There are different kind of relationship in this world. Friends, parents, children, husband, wife, and so many other relationships are there. Similarly, the typical relationship with brother and sister. And Kamsa was very attached to Devaki. And therefore, he was willing to drive the chariot. That is actually Jabhava Sudra. So he was willing to drive the chariot himself, showing his affection, souring his affection towards Devaki. And demigods are always afraid of all the situations. They always speculate and, you know, fear is always there. So therefore, going to heavenly planet is not safe. They were thinking, he is so affectionate to her, so when Krishna takes birth, probably will not be inimical towards him, towards her, whatever. The situation will be like that. So he was thinking, the demigods were thinking, if he is so affectionate towards Devaki, then Krishna will not be his enemy. If Krishna is not his enemy, then he will not be killed. Then we will have trouble, because he is a demon after all. We may have trouble in future. Or if Krishna takes his side, what will happen to us? So that was all these speculations going on. This is explained, Prabhupada explains it. I was just a little bit explaining in the way it could be. So Prabhupada says, the demigods, however, did not want Kamsa to be affectionate toward Devaki. They didn't want. They want Krishna to be his enemy number one. And they knew he cannot do anything to Krishna. Besides, Krishna should appear quickly. And he is the eighth child, therefore seventh child has to appear quickly. And the seven children are all the, Prabhupada explains, they are all the Marichis who have been cursed to take birth from the womb of Devaki and die immediately. And they should die immediately so that they get back to their original position as demigods. So if Kamsa becomes enemy, then he will quickly kill them. And if he quits killing, then Krishna will come quickly and he will be quickly destroyed. That was all the plan. So that plan was made, and this particular dialogue that comes. And when it comes, naturally, Kamsa was driving the chariot. Now our body is compared to a chariot. Senses are like horses, the reins are the mind, I think Katha Upanishad speaks about this. That our body is like a chariot, and our senses are like the horses. Horses are very strong, very powerful. In older days, in the science, they used to use this power unit as horsepower. Nowadays it is watts, but previously it is horsepower. Horse is very powerful. So these horses are very powerful, and they always want to go in different directions, distract a person. His grace Bhavanand Prabhu ki jai ho. Hare Krishna. So these horses are very powerful, but the reins are very subtle, very fine and weaker than some horses, but they can easily control the horses. So it's very, if you see this particular situation, Kamsa is riding a chariot and carrying the reins in his hands, supposed to be in control. But he was not in control of his own senses or mind, because it is explained in Gita that this krodha, which is he's going to exhibit in next few verses, krodha is born out of mode of passion. And passion means a lot of attachment to the body, a lot of attachment to the enjoyments through the body. Therefore, in such situation, the anger arises. So although he was driving a chariot, but he was failing to ride his own chariot in the due course. So this is the situation that is going to happen in the due course. But another very nice point Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, that when Devaki understood that Kamsa would be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who'd appear from her womb, she felt great joy. Can you imagine? This dialogue had just come and he knew what Kamsa is. Probably she was so innocent, she didn't feel that Kamsa is going to kill me. But Kamsa is going to be killed. But at the same time, in such a disturbed situation, she is feeling great joy that Krishna is going to appear from my womb. So this is very interesting. And whatever is going to happen in the due course, she is not bothered about that, of course. So we can see, in such a difficult situation, when Kamsa is like, already this, the terror must have been in his face right then and there, and he must have been completely shocked, and probably about to take out his sword, and next verse is taking it out. But at this point, he's on the move. But see, Devaki, she is a pure devotee. Being pure devotee, she is above all these disastrous situations. And she is feeling great joy in her heart that Krishna is going to appear. So I would like to link this particular theme to today's class. And I will speak about Srila Prabhupada, because today is ISKCON's incorporation in day. Today, like this 24th July, ISKCON was incorporated in New York, 1966. So how that particular event happened, and how Prabhupada, although he was going through so much of difficulties, how he was so enthusiastic, so powerful, so extremely optimistic about what he was doing. Although passing through so many difficulties and so many apparent failures. So, today's class will try to speak on that with all of your permissions and blessings. So, we know Srila Prabhupada reached America in 1965. I think it was August. By this Jaladuta, and it was a very treacherous, sea ride, ocean ride. And then he moved to New York in 1966, after a few months of arrival. And first he studied at Dr. Mishra's place, but because he was teaching a different philosophy, things didn't work out, so Prabhupada said, I should move out. He moved up to another place. He was renting a place. There, somebody stole his typewriter and his tape recorder, which are the very two important tools he was using to publish for future publications. So one of these, those days, the hippies, who was kind of attached to Prabhupada, said, why don't you come and stay with me in my loft? So Prabhupada moved to that place. And he was started his three evening classes at that particular place. Now, what is preaching in Bauri? That's a place called Bauri, south, which is like a downtown in New York. There are no trees in those areas, it is said somewhere, all the blank roads and buildings. And all the garbage cans would be always kind of overflowing, spilling over. There are drunkards all over. If you say Bauri is like our Dharavi, it will be like underestimation. It is like much more unclean place in that sense. I was reading this book by His Holiness Mukunda Goswami Maharaj, this Miracle on Second Avenue. And he says, the Bauri smelled like a mixture of beer and urine. Can you imagine? He says, an unmistakable odor that always hung in the summer air in Bauri. And the non-stop rumbles of cars, trucks passing by. It's a very noisy place. And that's where Prabhupada was living in a building. Now how Mukunda Maharaj met Prabhupada, he explains in that book, this will be like, we can understand Prabhupada's situation by understanding how he met Prabhupada in Bauri. Basically, he was a young man and he was a magician himself. Mukunda Maharaj was a magician. And he moved to Bauri to rent a house because it was cheap and he wanted a bigger place because where he can practice his music, all kind of noise will come. Listening concert is very nice, but practice sessions are very troublesome. Like devotees practice mudanga here and there. You move to that corner or this corner, don't come here. So he rented there a place where he could do that very nicely. And there he met a friend. And before that he met a friend whose name was Dick. And he was very intelligent, brilliant person. Very, very brilliant. But he broke all the rules. For example, he would come to the classes drinking alcohol. And he would, in the middle of class, he would get up and go away in the class. So that is like too insult for a classroom teacher. In class, Bhagavatam class, somebody gets up and goes. That happens. But for a professor teaching in a classroom, somebody gets up in the middle and just go away. That's a big insult. He would do all kind of these things. Prostitution and all kind of drugs. And he broke all the rules that anybody would propose. And something like that attracts people's, in a young man's mind, it attracts. Young men don't like to follow rules, especially teenagers. This is happening in 15, 16 year, when he was 15 or 16. And he said, I was trying to imitate him to some extent, being inspired by him. But then what happened, 1 year later, this Dick was driving a car and met with an accident, head-on collision with a truck. All the family members survived in the car. Dick died. He was killed. Then our Mukunda Maharaj, then his name was Michael Grant. He heard the news. He, along with one of his teacher and friend, went to the funeral parlor. We have beauty parlor, they have funeral parlor in America. So he went and people were going in a file, in a line. As he passed by his friend, he saw his face. He said, I saw death face to face for the first time in my life. And I felt very sick about it. And he was very morose, very sad, and he returned, not able to analyze. He was not able to process the death, how it happened and why it happened. Not able to understand any head or tail of it. So one of his teacher asked, are you okay? Are you doing well? He said, actually not. Then he said, well, these things happen. It's the reality of life. It comes to everybody. He said, but why it happened to him? Such a young person. He's of my age. Why he died like that? Where is he now? He didn't ask that question. But he said, well, I don't know all these things, the teacher is saying. I cannot answer all these questions. But you can approach a teacher who can answer this question. He said, but you are my teacher. He said, I'm your teacher, but I cannot answer this question. So you have to approach another kind of teacher. Anyway, all those answered questions didn't appeal to him much. But he became more philosophical and started reading Oriental philosophies. And he was reading many, many books and trying to approach many gurus, teachers. So he moved to New York, and after moving to New York, he started searching for teachers, gurus. And there are many funny encounters. One, he went to the uptown where there was an Indian Swami, but he spoke in such a way that he felt as if his nerves were, you know, irritated by hearing all those kind of voice. So he just got out of that place. Couldn't make any sense of that class. Nothing made any sense. Then he met another Buddhist guru, Buddhist monk. And the monk came into the class, and their sheets were, you know, circulated among all the people who gathered there, and there was a song. And what was the song? Song was very strange. Like, ye, ye, me, me, ni, ni, ti, ti, ya, ya, woo, like that, all this thing kind of voice, no? And the teacher sang that song, and they followed with him. And his voice was standing above all of them. And after that, suddenly he just rose and left the room. I said, he didn't spoke anything. I came to hear something. I didn't know about death. Nothing came. Then he started talking to his followers, his students. And he said, I talked for them for an hour. Then all I could gather from that talk is that after you have fasted, do not break it with orange juice. That's all he could understand from that class. He said, I decided never to go back to that place. That was it. Like that was meeting many people. Then somebody suggested, the Swami, Indian Swami in Bauri. He said, in Bauri? I stay there. Yes, Indian Swami. I'll definitely check out. So he goes. 94 Bauri. That was the first place he said. But when he reached there, right in the building, in the fourth floor, Prabhupada was staying, third or fourth floor. He said, two drunkards are sitting right on the doorway, not allowing to enter. So somehow he crossed and bypassed them. And they're cursing him. Many galis, you know, one after other. Anyway, he didn't bother because he was in a different mood. He didn't mind those things. But he said, as I entered the staircase, the smell was even worse. The outside it was urine and beer. Inside it was urine, beer and vomit. Such a horrible smell. So standing in the staircase, he was thinking, should I go further or should I go back? He's thinking like that. And it was dark. There was no light in that staircase. Then, not knowing what to do, he was still climbing, taking the support of the wall on his hand. His right hand was touching the wall, and the support of the wall, he was climbing the staircase. And finally, he heard that Kartal voice, ching, 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 like that. And as he went up, it grew louder and louder and louder. Then he heard verses of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Then he entered that room, which is the door was slightly open, and some light was coming out. Just pushed the door, entered. Some 8 or 9 students or hippies were sitting there. So he went and sat in the corner. And Prabhupada chanted for 15 minutes. Then he started a class. When he started his class, Prabhupada closed his eyes while speaking. He didn't look at the... Probably was thinking, if I looked at them, looking at their, you know, different kind of dresses and all, I don't know what the reason may be, but Prabhupada closed his eyes and spoke the class. And what he spoke, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. The sound Krishna and just by chanting Krishna, we're in touch with God, he was saying, immediately. And when you're in touch with God, there is no misery, no sufferings. So he was, then he said, people are suffering because of janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, birth, death, old age and disease. So when he spoke this voice, is there something that he wanted to actually hear, you know, because his friend died and all these things that was happening. And Prabhupada was speaking exactly the same thing that he was expecting to hear. Although he was hearing, he said, I was not able to understand exactly what he was saying. And Prabhupada said there are 84 lakhs of species. One who is very intelligent, he can stop this process of birth then completely and overcome all the miseries. So Prabhupada is speaking all these things. And while hearing, like we are sitting and hearing in a class and our mind also goes in different directions, right? And he was analyzing Prabhupada. This Swami, what is he doing here in this Bauri? He seems to be very, very intellectual, very immaculate, very, very stately. All these words he's using. Very, very gracious and powerful person. What is he doing in Bauri? He's thinking all these questions are flooding his brain. But he was hearing. He said, I couldn't understand what you're saying, and I was analyzing very fast, analyzing his class. So one good thing we can see in those people, that although they didn't know Krishna or any philosophy, which he was trying to read many books also before coming to Prabhupada. He tried Gita also. Couldn't make any sense. Why there was a war after the peace was spoken in the Bhagavad Gita about peace formula and all. Why there was a war? He was asking many people, he was not able to understand. One of his Indian girl was there. She said, well, it is like Gita is saying our life is a struggle and we have to fight. So it didn't make any sense. So all these questions were there. So one good thing is that he was highly eager to know. That was a very good qualification actually. Highly eager to know. And trying to grasp what Prabhupada is saying and trying to willing to apply also. If he finds it good, he's willing to apply. That was his situation. So he was analyzing Prabhupada's class, and Prabhupada in class he was saying, I was repeatedly hearing one phrase. Swamiji is saying, I am not this body, I am not this body, many times. Then after hearing many times, I concluded like this, that Swamiji is not his body. That was his conclusion. So all the class he understood like this, you know, you can understand. But because Prabhupada was very gracious and friendly, and there was urgency in his voice, because Prabhupada was probably thinking he has very less time. People are coming sometimes one time, they'll go back, never come back. He wanted to give whatever he could in one class. Very urgent. And all these feelings that was accompanying his lecture was appealing to Mukund Maharaj at the time. And he was thinking after the class, what is going to happen? Will he leave like the other guru or the Chinese guru? He was thinking like that. But Prabhupada continued to sat. After the class was over, Prabhupada opened his eyes and said, any questions? So he raised his hand and asked one question. He said, I have a question. What is the question? He asked a very nice question actually. He said, Prabhupada also spoke about three modes of material nature, goodness, passion and ignorance. So suppose a man, a very good man in goodness, he has overcome ignorance and passion and is walking on the streets, say for example Istanbul or Delhi. I don't know why he gave that example, as if America is not, America is free of crime, because he's going to speak about crime now. So he said, walking on the street of Delhi, and he saw another man beating an old man is suffering, crying out in pain, asking for help. Now what should this good man do? Should he help him? But if he helps him, then he has to come down to mode of passion. Because you have to help him, so you have to beat the other guy. You have to beat the other guy, you have to be in passion. So should he come down and help him? Or should he, maintaining his goodness, walk off? That was his question. Very brilliant question. So he said, Prabhupada said, one should act from a spiritual point prospect. Prabhupada again closed his eyes before speaking. Closed his eyes, said, it is not a matter of good or bad, it is a matter of we should act from a spiritual platform. Because in a material point of view, helping is good. But from a spiritual point of view, we should act according from a higher prospect. Otherwise, even activities and mode of goodness will bind us to this world. He didn't understand anything. He said, Prabhupada confused me more. And after saying that, Prabhupada again opened his eyes and said, any further queries? Again he raised his hand. He said, I just wanted to know whether he would help or not. Prabhupada understood his mood. Prabhupada said, yes, good men will help. And stop the session. The session was over. And then he was thinking whether Prabhupada will stay or go back. Prabhupada continued sitting there. And he wanted to speak to him, but he couldn't approach directly. So he thought, let me approach the person who's owning the place. They're talking to him, who are you, where are you from, and all those kind of questions. Then he asked ultimately, can I speak to Swami? He said, of course, he's a very free and frank person, so you can go. So he approached Prabhupada. Prabhupada was sitting and he was standing in front of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada looked up like this. He says, later I understood that we should sit below Swami, not above him. But then Prabhupada never showed any sign of disapproval. He was smiling, there's a big grin on his mouth, seeing him like this and asking, how can I help, how can I serve, something like that. So he said, I had nothing to say, so I just said, I have a tambura. Can I bring it? Prabhupada said, of course, sure, bring it. And then there are a few discussions. Then he returned back very happy, analyzing so many things, but thought, definitely I'll come back. And he did, of course. So this is how Prabhupada was preaching in the Bauri. But there are so many. Then he took them on a retreat to Mishra's house, spiritual retreat, like we take yatras. Sometimes I always bus goes, some yatras, short yatras. The Prabhupada also at that time took them on a retreat to Mishra's place. Or a big place, a greeneries, you can hear the birds chirping, morning programs, a lot of lectures. And because many Mishra students are also there, they're monoist, they're like impersonalists. So there used to be many questions they would put forward and Prabhupada would be arguing and defeating them. So they didn't like all these kind of arguments, some of them. And Prabhupada said one point that we should have a love feast on every Sunday. So Mukund Maharaj said, love feast is something like, sounds like some counterculture word. Swami, why is he using these words? He was thinking a little like that. But feast is good. But Prabhupada said, love feast is singing, dancing and feasting. He said, dancing? What is it, dancing? He could not combine in his mind dance and spirituality, basically. But for Sunday feast, Prabhupada cooked a lot of items displayed on and he was thinking, in this Bauri place, how can there be festival? In this room, he was looking at the loft and all the places. How can there be festival here? But then Prabhupada cooked a lot of dishes. They came, they were eating. Prabhupada was carrying each item in his left hand and right hand a spoon, reaching to all these devotees who came. They're eating happily, enjoying, but they're still thinking, why this, what is this all happening? They're not able to make any sense. But Prabhupada was very energetically moving devotee to devotee, trying to serve prasad. And they were amazed by his enthusiasm and energy. What is this, Swami? Because behind this, Prabhupada was not just speaking little philosophy. It's like somebody very advanced, Nobel laureate, just imagine. And he is giving classes for the graduate courses. Undergraduate courses, I mean. How wonderful it would be, just imagine. There was a Nobel laureate actually, Feynman. And he gave classes, undergraduate classes in one of American university. And those classes are very famous because he understands at such a high level. So when he spoke, the fundamentals were so clear and so much clarity was there. It made a lot of sense. So Prabhupada is a self-realized, highly advanced, perfected, you know, Krishna's man. So when he was speaking, people were not able to see the depth that he was carrying within himself. And today is like we are trying to understand how ISKCON was incorporated. So all these people were coming, classes were going on, questions were happening. Sometimes there were debates. They're not able to understand. And in the meantime, the person with whom Prabhupada was sharing the room, like they were still addicted to drugs. So created a lot of, because of psychological problem, he created a lot of offenses and inconveniences, even violence, even up the point of like could actually kill Prabhupada. That was the situation. So some of devotees who really loved Prabhupada, one of his name was Carl at that time, he called up Mukund Maharaj, who was Michael at that time. Early morning at 7 o'clock. He said, Swami and I were on a walk, morning walk, and Swami wants to come up to your place. Then he says, I'm just sleeping. 7 o'clock in the morning. He says, I've just slept 1 hour back or 2 hours back. I'm in deep in sleep. Please don't bring him. Don't kid with me. Don't bring him now. No, Swami wants to come. It's not me. He wants to come. I said, okay, give me at least 5 minutes. But before 5 minutes could pass, they were there on the doors. They came inside, they sat, and actually they came to speak about the problems Prabhupada was facing with this particular person in the loft. Then he understood that Swami wants to find a new place. And Prabhupada was asking, how long you are staying here and all this question he was asking. Then he thought, probably he wants to stay at my place. Then instead of answering the question, he says, actually this place is filled with musicians. We practice till late night, drummers are there, you know. People play, you know, all kind of musical instruments. So, but I would like to help, he said. I would like to help. Then said, okay, we'll try to find a new place. Then this 26th Second Avenue, that spot was spotted. And three of them went to speak to the person who was owning that place. And they asked how much it is. He said, $100 per month. When they said like that, then Prabhupada started speaking to him. He said, you see, Prabhupada was carrying three books, Bhagavatam volumes. Bhagavatam, Gita was not published at that time. So he just handed over that books to him. He said, see, we are running a society. There was no society at that time. And he's saying, this Carl and Michael, they are members. And Mukund Maharaj says, I was not a member at that time. And they are willing to pay $21 every month. He said, I never promised like that. And he said, all I paid to him is $15 for three books, which was reading very intensely. Mukund Maharaj reading all the Bhagavatam and he was getting all the answers, questioned by the sages, all the chapters he was observed. He said, wherever I went, I was reading these books. On the local trains, on the buses, and on the stops. Whenever I would get time, I would read these books because he was so much eager to understand about truth of life. That was his situation and he was absorbed. So he was happy with all those books. So he said, all I paid is $15. Swami never asked me anything, I never paid anything to him. In fact, he said, I was trying to pay $5 and get all the three books. That was his situation. Anyway, so Prabhupada spoke like that. He said, why don't you also become a member? So you have to pay just $21 every month. And we will pay you $69. In this way, this deal will be done. $85 deal was done. So he took those books. He flipped the pages while carrying the books. He said, I have another flat also. That means he accepted this deal. So when he said that, Prabhupada, Mukund Maharaj and Carl, they looked at each other with surprise that he accepted. So they didn't thought he would accept. Then they saw the other flat where Prabhupada is going to stay. And that was also settled for $100, some $85. So total $164 they have to pay him every month. And it was, he said, you don't have to pay any bill, advance deposits. And they said, great. And it was decided. And after reaching that, Prabhupada, after a few occasions, meetings, Prabhupada says, we will incorporate International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON. When he said ISKCON, he started laughing, saying that word. He was feeling kind of laughter came out of his mouth. But why he did that, we'll try to discuss that. I have little time, yeah. So, Srila Prabhupada was planning very big. And apparently no one among his students knew about this. They're just coming, taking prasad, and leaving the vessels for Prabhupada to clean. And hearing the classes, asking questions, many things were happening, interesting happening. But they didn't know what he was up to. He spoke about society and all this thing, they didn't make any sense to them. So, there is a quote by Michelangelo, which I just came across a few days back. Michelangelo is a very big artist. He says, the greater danger lies not in setting our goal too high and not achieving it. Rather, danger lies in setting goal too low and achieving it. That's what he says. That's the danger. You cannot come up with anything with original. So always, there is a saying, you aim for the sky, at least you'll hit the ceiling. So Prabhupada's plans were all big because he had that strength of this realization of this knowledge. He knew his Guru Maharaj's instruction cannot go in vain. He knew Mahaprabhu wanted to preach every town and village. He knew that all these things cannot go vain. He has full conviction and faith in all those things. Besides, he knew the power of philosophy of Srimad Bhagavat Gita and Bhagavatam. Therefore, he was kind of convinced what he is doing. So, Srila Prabhupada wanted to build a Radha Krishna temple in New York, living in Bowery. Can you imagine? And that plan was not just a plan, not just a daydream. He was acting day and night while giving all these classes, while Kirtan was going on, while all the cooking was going on, while the typewriting is going on publications. All these things he was doing. Intensely busy. At the same time, this bigger side of the plan is also activated. It was active. And while I was reading the letters by Prabhupada between this time, 1966, it was July it was incorporated, so I was trying to read letters before that. And then also I saw, in Lilamrit also, His Holiness Satguru Das Maharaj, he's also writing about many of the letters he also quotes in that particular Lilamrit book. So I was reading many letters, and one letter he writes to Mangalaniloy Brahmachari. Mangalaniloy means one who brings auspiciousness. That's a nice name. Because he wanted to join Prabhupada and help him in his movement in America. And Prabhupada was very excited because anybody wanted to help, he was eager to take that help, no matter who he was. And especially this Indian boy, if he comes, he can play mridaga and do so many things. So he was very excited. So Prabhupada writes a long letter to him. I'm just quoting a small part of it. So I'll be reading now many letters where Prabhupada expresses his desire to build a temple. And that's how this ISKCON as a body, institution, is coming forward. That's what I could gather from this reading. So he says to this Brahmachari, a letter, regarding the construction of the temple here in New York and in other places, I have now decided to struggle for it to the end of my life. And I am glad that you have decided to follow my instruction in this connection. I think I shall be able to finish this job even if Government of India does not allow me any exchange. So what is happening is, Prabhupada actually spoke to many persons, and finally, Padmapad Singhania, Sri Padmapad Singhania, who was a very big industrialist, he agreed to sponsor for all the money required to construct a temple. But to get that money, if you get Indian money in America, it won't worth anything. Nobody's going to take it. Right? They need dollars. So to convert that money to dollars, Prabhupada needed Indian government help, because government will release the dollars, then it will come to America, then he can use it to construct the temple. So Prabhupada was trying to get the exchange for the rupees. But it was in millions. Because he wanted to build a temple with all Vedic style, with carvings and all those things. And Singhania was ready to sponsor actually. So Prabhupada was saying how the government was actually not helping him. Actually, one letter later, I'll just read that one first. Prabhupada's writing to Sumati Moraji, who actually she sponsored Prabhupada's voyage to America. Prabhupada writes to her, I have come here in this old age neither for sightseeing nor for any personal interest. It is for the interest of the entire humanity that I am trying to implement this science of Krishna, which will actually make them happy. So it is the duty of every devotee of Lord Krishna to help me by all means. So she's writing all the people, to many of his god brothers who had contacts in government, to help contact President of India, contact Finance Minister. And they had actually contacts, but they're not able to do anything there to release the dollars. So he wrote to RBI one letter. So RBI, they replied back, you write to the finance ministry. So Prabhupada write to the finance ministry through Commissioner of India in New York. There was no reply for a long time. Then finally Commissioner said, India cannot release so much of dollars because we have foreign currency, crunch of foreign currency, something like that. We cannot give any money. So they refused. So at that point, Prabhupada did not stop. He continued the struggle because there was many foundations in America. One of them was Salvation Army. Salvation Army is a group of charitable people, like we have NGOs in India. And they would help people all over the world to remove poverty or feed the people, things like that. And they had a lot of outlets in India. And he talked to them and he made them agree that you take the money, Indian currency from Singhania, and use it in your Indian outlets. And equivalent of dollars you give me. And they actually agreed. But somehow this also didn't work out. And Prabhupada tried in all respects. He never gave up. And Prabhupada says that I am not trying to incorporate one corporation of the local friends and admirers under the name International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Inc. Negotiation is going on the lawyer to formulate the scheme. And as soon as this is incorporated, I shall submit application for sponsoring you in this country. Like that he is asking to come over. And the plan is, now why the ISKCON came, we'll just read it now. And Prabhupada says, why he wanted a temple in New York, you may be asking. People may be thinking, why he should have just preached. Why he wanted a temple? Because he says, Srila Prabhupada, and that means Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, Prabhupada, that is Guru of Srila Prabhupada. He says, Srila Prabhupada wanted to construct some temples in the foreign countries as preaching centers of the message of Srila Rupa and Raghunath. And I am trying to do this in this part of the world. The money is ready and the opportunity is open. If by seeing the finance minister this work can be facilitated, why should I wait for time? Like that he was saying. If we can open one center in New York, there is great potential for opening other centers also, not only in America, but also in Europe, Japan, China, and many other places, just to fulfill the desire of Srila Prabhupada and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is purely cultural program for spreading the Hindu culture. And if the Hindus have no such scope for spreading their culture, then what is the meaning of independence? Because Hindus are the government here. Just imagine if some people want to make a church here, how nicely it is sponsored by so many countries all from different worlds in India, isn't it? Prabhupada very honestly wanted to raise a temple in New York, but government of India didn't help. Hindus government for Hindu culture. So what is the use of the freedom? Prabhupada is saying like this. Therefore Prabhupada wrote to RBI and all these things happened. And Prabhupada then spoke to the Salvation Army and he's saying them, I have got money in India, to the Salvation Army he wrote this letter. I have got money in India and I wanted to get it from India for starting the above center, but the government of India has no dollar exchange to pay in America. Therefore, I have been handicapped in this attempt. I know that you have a great number of centers in India for your missionary work and you spend many thousands of American money in India for your noble activities. If you therefore accept my money in India and pay me in dollars here in America for my spending here, it will be great cooperation. Anyway, that didn't work out. Then Prabhupada thought about it and he writes in another letter to one of his godbrother, he says, the American Foundation, then he thought that I should take help from American Foundation directly. Forget Singhania, forget Salvation Army, forget Government of India. He didn't stop. He said, the American Foundation do not contribute anything to any institution or organization if it is not properly incorporated by law of the land. Therefore, he wanted ISKCON. Because the American government is not, no, none of the foundation will help him. So far I have knowledge of the Indian residents in America. They are mostly engaged in local educational or Indian government service in the embassy. So Indians were there in America at that point of time. They're not big rich people. They're either some local, they're like professors or students, or they're in the embassy serving the government. So they couldn't contribute a lot of money for the construction of temple. So therefore, there is very little hope to get from them any substantial help for the construction of the temple, which will require some millions of dollars. But if the Americans take the matter very seriously, there are many foundations, even one of them alone can contribute such amount. Therefore, Prabhupada said, I have therefore very recently incorporated one organization very recently, within a fortnight, under the name International Society for Krishna Consciousness, incorporated in USA. The trustees of this organization are all American gentlemen, headed by one of the leading lawyers of the New York, Mr. Stephen Goldsmith, BSc, MA, BLB, like the Prabhupada writes, who comes regularly in my weekly classes and chants Maha Mantra very devoutly. So Goldsmith was the only person who was not a drug addict or anything at that time. He was the only clean person in the class. Anyway, so all this struggle was there, but finally the government was failing him, there was failure at all aspect. And finally one letter Prabhupada writes like this, after the government refused, after all these godbrothers attempt, they made some feeble attempt which was failed. And in fact, godbrothers told him, you come to India and you do it yourself. That was one of the proposal. Prabhupada said, I cannot leave at this point. The preaching is happening, the people are coming. So he writes, so the controversy is now closed and there is no need of help from anyone else. Then he says, Prabhupada is saying very humbly he is saying, instead of I, he is saying we at this point. We are not always successful in our attempts in preaching work. So Prabhupada tried in India, he failed. Now in America, he's trying something, nothing is working out. In the beginning, struggle, you can see. We are not always successful in our attempts in preaching work. But such failures are not certainly ludicrous. So once somebody was asking His Holiness Radha Swami, why are the pure devotees, they fail in many things they do? Why Krishna fail them? Then he said, we see the failure, but actually, through all these failures, the person is actually advancing. And his faith and trust in Krishna is not decreasing. Something like this, I'm not able to paraphrase properly. That he is actually passing. You may be seeing a failure. The pure devotee is actually, all through all these failures, he is actually passing on. He is going ahead. So Prabhupada, you can see the similar kind of statement is saying, we are not successful, but such failures are not certainly ludicrous. Why? In the absolute field, both success and failures are glorious. You see, even Lord Nityananda pretended, of course Nityananda cannot fail. Lord Nityananda Prabhu cannot fail. Prabhupada is writing very careful and writings, so accurate. You see, even Lord Nityananda pretended to be a failure to convert Jagai Madhai in his first attempt. Rather, he was personally injured in such attempt, but that was certainly not ludicrous. The whole thing was transcendental and it was glorious for all the parties concerned. That's how, amidst all these failures and refusals and preaching never stopped, typewriting never stopped, at the same time, these feelings, the experience, spiritual experiences are very, very in place and very high. Prabhupada never discouraged. But sometimes, if we would have been in that place, probably we would have been crashed by that time completely. So Prabhupada says, it is however difficult to raise funds from Indian residents in America. So somebody said, you raise funds from Indians in America. He says, it's not possible. That was all, not so much money they have to raise. My followers here are 99% Americans. So there is no question of Indian helping me. But Indian government has taken written declaration from me that I shall not collect any money from Americans. That's how he is allowed to go to America. So therefore I cannot raise funds from Americans also. See the situation. So unless I do get such permission, I think I will have to return to India. So there is no, all the roads are blocked. Wherever I went, it was blocked. This way blocked. Every way was blocked. And he's saying, probably, he's not saying I will. Unless such thing happens, probably I'll have to return India, disappointed, to live at Vrindavan peacefully for the remaining days of my life. So Vrindavan was always there for him. Sir, Padmapat Singhani of your city, another letter he writes, was ready to spend lakhs of rupees for this temple in New York, but government of India did not sanction. So I am trying locally to start a temple. So Prabhupada did not stop actually. That was another feeling. This is his final feeling. He says, I am trying to. So after all this happened, he says, I am now trying to locally start a temple and most probably I shall be successful. Still he is saying, I shall be successful. To start one, not only in New York, but also one in California and other in Montreal, Canada. Because in both cities, there are my disciples who are already working there. Disciple means they don't have money. Who are already working there. I hope you will be pleased to learn about considerable success in my preaching activity. This is to Moraji, Sumati Moraji. Because Sumati Moraji said at one point that you should not return till your mission is achieved. And Prabhupada was very happy to hear that. That was encouragement. He says, Krishna is speaking through you. I am very thankful to you. So now, in the meantime, Prabhupada meets his students at 22nd, 6th Avenue and says, one day he says, we shall call our society ISKCON. Prabhupada had laughed playfully when he first coined this acronym. And then he knew what was behind it, all this temple building and all these, you know, things. Few of them, they know something about it, but they didn't know the intensity of the whole affair. What would sound more familiar to Vaishnava, somebody suggested that we should name it International Society for God Consciousness. That would be more comfortable. Vaishnava should be more comfortable with that. Prabhupada said, no. We'll call it Krishna Consciousness. Why? Because God was a vague term. Whereas Krishna was exact and scientific. God Consciousness was spiritually weaker. Less personal. God is impersonal actually. But if you say Krishna, it is personal. You call somebody, hey. That is one way, but you call by name, that is better way, isn't it? So, and if Vaishnavas didn't know that Krishna was God, then the International Society of Krishna Consciousness would tell them by spreading his glories in every town and village. If they don't know Krishna, we'll tell them. We'll tell in every town and village, Krishna is God. Okay, that's why Prabhupada was so strong. Krishna Consciousness was Prabhupada's own rendering of a phrase from Srila Rupa Goswami's Padyavali. It was something that he read from Rupa Goswami's book, that word he coined. Krishna Consciousness, the term was not there, not even in Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, till Prabhupada actually coined it first. Because Rupa Goswami says, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita, to be absorbed in the mellow taste of executing devotional service to Krishna. That's how this Krishna Consciousness word came. And these devotees at Bowery at 22nd Avenue, they're thinking, Swamiji is forming a society, but why? They're thinking, probably for tax exemption. In case someone gives a big donation, in case, donation never come like that, in case someone gives a big donation, and for the other benefits, an official religious society might receive, the tax should be exempted. They're thinking like this. Anyway, so, but Prabhupada is planning for the future and he is planning for much more than just tax exemptions. He is trying to serve his spiritual predecessors and fulfill the scriptural prediction of spiritual movement. What is that prediction? That is to flourish for 10,000 years in the midst of the age of Kali. Within the first Kali Kali is a period which is at least 4,000 to 2,000 years. The 1960s are but an insignificant moment. So people are not understanding the purpose of why ISKCON was incorporated. They are thinking, she is speaking about society and members, but where are the members and where is the society? But in the due course, in that place where Prabhupada was giving class, from 8, 10, 12, 15 boys, gradually it grew. Within months' time, it was like 50, 60, 70 people attending his class. And then people are standing outside the door on the street listening to the kirtan and the lecture. So when that was started happening, Mukund Maharaj says, then I started feeling, probably there is a society here now. That was his thinking. But good thing is that they always tried to help Prabhupada. And whenever they would not be able to do, they were feeling bad that I couldn't do this. For example, Prabhupada said, when they got that building, Prabhupada said, why don't you go to the office and tell them to switch on the light, that is electricity, and don't ask for any deposits, because for it is for a non-profit organization. They should not ask for a deposit because you have to pay some deposits. So he went to them, told them, they said, have you registered? Have you registered anywhere? Do you have an account number previously? He said, no. Then they said, you have to pay like any other persons. So he came back to Prabhupada, said, I have to pay. He didn't say, you have to pay. He said, I have to pay. That's how he reacted. That's very nice. Prabhupada felt a little unhappy. He didn't like that answer. The next day he went himself and got the tax free deposit. Himself got and did it. So he was feeling, I should have done it. He had to go and all these things he thought. So he was feeling bad. So all these things were actually making them a part of a great mission which Prabhupada was carrying. So you can see Srila Prabhupada's personality, like he was a father as well as a mother in the same person. Normally in a house we see, we have parents, father is one aspect, very strict rules, punishment also sometimes. Nowadays it's not allowed. But previously there used to be a lot of punishments, a lot of rules. And that is father's personality. And mother's personality is to give love, affection, tenderness. And that's how a child is nourished. But Prabhupada had to do both the things simultaneously while preaching. So it is like a father, all these official activities, all this brainstorming was going on. Letters after letters after letters, nothing was happening. A lot of stress. At the same time, the students are coming and they're like his sons. So the mother aspect also we see. So Mukund Maharaj had a very bad time in the small thing happened with him. Not small thing actually. He was falsely charged with rape and drug dealings and trying to give drugs to some minor. And he was jailed. Falsely. And some other he came out of that. That's how that book actually begins with this kind of thing. I think I'm killing the suspense. You can try to read that book. So anyway, nobody calls him. Nobody tries to talk to him. Even in America, you see, bad things are condemned by everyone. Although many of them are themselves bad. Like when Bill Clinton did some little bit mistake was happening with president, some mistake happened, the whole country brought him to the streets. Although practically many people do the way he did. Nobody likes the bad things. It's a fact. So none of his friends called him, nobody was there. He said, nobody called me. At least I could explain them and that I was not wrong. I'm not that bad. He said, I was not a saint at that time. At 24, I was not a saint, definitely. But I was not that bad. I could have explained them, but nobody called. But Prabhupada read, because he went out of the city to some other place, and this thing happened there, and he was in jail. Then he returned to Bauri, and there was no way Prabhupada could know it. Prabhupada read it in a newspaper, and one day he called. And he picked the phone. And Prabhupada's voice was there on the other side. He says, Mr. Michael, I heard there had been some trouble. Then he says, yes, there had been some trouble. But Prabhupada says, then I read it in the newspaper. Prabhupada is not encouraging reading newspaper, but that's how he said. Somebody must have showed him. Some other person would have showed him. And when he heard that, all that thing happened with him flashed back in his head. My God, Swami now knows it. Then he felt a little bad. He said, no, it is all settled. Everything is in line. Nothing to worry about. Like that he said. The next line Prabhupada says, can you come over here for lunch? Next question. Then he didn't expect that. He said, yeah, I'll come. Then he says, every day 1 o'clock we have it. Can you come today? So he says, okay, I'll come today. So then he goes to the 22nd. And after that place was achieved, ISKCON was incorporated, he goes back to that place. And immediately Prabhupada welcomes him very friendly. Says, Michael, come. Like in India, say, aye, bolte na. He's writing like, Michael, come. Sit. eat, like that. And he's feeding a lot of prasad, he fed him, like a father. And he said, I felt comfortable and happy. And this Prabhupada was dealing, and he said, nobody called me, but Swami called me. That was like something that touched him like anything. And that was not because a person cannot do it artificially. That heart was there. Prabhupada was carrying that motherly heart. And in another letter, I will end with this. He was there in the America. First he was in Pennsylvania, that place, Butler. And he was staying with Gopal and Shali Agarwal, right? And he writes letter to them also saying thanks. And Sally wrote back one letter, and again Prabhupada is writing back another letter to her. And in that letter he is writing regarding, like Prabhupada is writing to her, because Prabhupada is cooking food there also, and they used to delish it. And she wrote back saying, your food was great. Prabhupada is saying, regarding your reminder for my good cooking, I am very much thankful to you. And next time when I shall go to your home, I must serve you with good lunches without fail. I was saying. Now I am far away from you. Otherwise, I would have at once gone to you and entertained with you such lunches. बहुत दूर ऐसे नहीं कर पा रहे. I am anxious to learn about the health of you all especially of your little children. How is your naughty daughter Kamala? Please offer them my love and blessings, and so also accept both of you. Please write to me occasionally, as Gopal is not accustomed to reply promptly. Then he says, did you meet your good father and mother in the meantime? If you meet them, please offer them my respectful regards. Both your father and mother are good souls. Therefore, you are a good daughter of your parents. I remember all of you always. That's Prabhupada writes. So like that Prabhupada, like this motherly aspect also we can see. And that's a pure devotee who is endowed with all 26 great qualities. And because of his great mercy and compassion, we are here and listening to these wonderful narrations from Srimad Bhagavatam and great philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Just 2 minutes remaining. Should I take questions? Any one questions, if anybody has? Try to answer. Srila Prabhupada ki. Tai Gaur Premanande.